Thank you for that prayer. Well, good morning, everyone. Greetings in Jesus' name, the giver of peace. And he is the one that allows us to have peace in whatever situation we are in. This morning, I'd still like to start off with some questions. So how many of you guys have had any experience whatsoever with pruning trees, grapes, or shrubs, garden or orchard? I know, Timothy, you have as well. Okay, so do you know why do we prune trees? Why do we prune shrubs, even roses too?
To bear more
fruit. Right. Is there any other reason?
Shape.
That's right. Is there any more ideas?
Putting energy into the branches we want to grow.
Amen. Yes. What happens if we don't prune? Like, if there's a branch that we see and we're like, well, we'll leave that and leave it till next year, what happens to that branch? Does it get smaller?
It grows,
and it's a bigger problem for the next year. So I'm going to write my title on the board this morning. Make sure you're open the right end of the marker. Problems. How do we respond? Problems are something that we all face in life, or I know I do. I know a lot of you fairly well, and I know you guys probably face those too, and you're not alone in that. But how are our responses? That's something I want to ask ourselves as we go through these scriptures and these stories that we have this morning. But like those branches, our problems, if we don't deal with them, I'm sorry, no, if we don't allow God to work through problems and through cutting in our life, it will just grow and grow and get really nasty. Which reminds me of some trees we had in our backyard. We had some apple trees there, and the first year that I moved there before I got married, I went out to prune them, and they had some shoots sticking up the top about, I'd probably say about 10 feet, like just straight up, like they were big, and it was pretty ugly, actually. But it must have been untouched for years. I'm not sure how many years, but we cut it back hard, and it probably didn't like it. The tree, we cut all these fancy, nice new branches that it was putting a lot of energy into growing. We cut them off because we did not want it to be that way. It was not going to be good for the tree. And it wasn't going to be good for its fruit. It wasn't going to be good for its shape. And it would not have been all that extra branch, those extra branches and those leaves would have put too much strain on the branches below. So it wasn't good for that. And I had to think that with that, as we were pruning again this year, that we ran into some of those branches that I didn't cut off that I should have cut off. And they were quite a bit bigger. And I thought I had, a tree can only produce its full potential of fruit after years of pruning. And I thought how sometimes we are like that as well, when we, after years, maybe even a lifetime of trials and of going through pruning in our own lives, only then can we experience our fruitfulness that God has meant us to go through. And most of the time, it also hurts when those things are removed. It doesn't feel good. Another thought I had was, my wife, she likes to grow petunias. Is that what they're called? I think that's what they're called. They're petunias. And a lot of times, she'll get them from the store, and they are usually all blooming. They're usually bigger. But this last year, she tried, and she did very good at it, by the way. She tried growing them from seed. She started them in, I think it was February or March. She started them in little cups in the garage. Put a grow light over the top of them. And pretty soon we had this little tiny plant coming up. And then it grew after several weeks, and it became about probably about this tall. It was a little cute thing, and she put it out in the flower bed, and then after a couple weeks, it pushed out this massive bloom, probably about that long. It was kind of cute, this little plant pushing out this flower almost as big as itself. And then we heard later that if you were to pinch that bloom off, it would help it to put energy into other areas in the plant so it could eventually bring forth more fruit and more blooms. So with that in mind, I'd like to do something a little different as we go through some stories. I might be chopping this stuff up a little bit, but hopefully that's okay with you guys. So we're going to look at some stories of some people in the Bible, but we're only going to look at their problems. Usually when we see, usually when we read these stories, we know the beginning and we know the end because we know these stories so well. So we're going to try to make it easier for us to put ourselves in their shoes by only reading their problems and try to identify with the problems as we go through that. But before we go into that, let's turn to James chapter 1. All right, James chapter 1, I'm going to read verses 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. And that's not diverse temptations like sometimes that word can look like, but it's diverse temptations. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. And I was folding blankets there at the warehouse couple days ago, and as I was processing those, I was just thinking about what I was going to need to speak this morning and about this topic, and I wondered about this verse, temptation. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. I'd always grown up that verse, or that word temptation means to be tempted, or when you fall into temptation, when you're tempted of the devil to sin, something specific. But then I had the thought, maybe it doesn't quite mean that. So I looked it up, and the Strong's definition means it can mean a trial or a time of proving. So I thought that was interesting that we're called to counter all joy in that temptation. So we're going to look at some stories here and some people's experiences. We're going to see how they responded to the problems in their lives. And essentially, there's only two ways to respond. There's a good way and there's a bad way. There's a way that's going to result in death, as we'll see here with some of these stories, and then there's some that will resort in, or that the result will be life and blessings to other people around them as well. This first story, we're going to look into the story of Joseph a little bit. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 37, and we're going to read verses 18 through 28. That's Genesis chapter 37. And as we read through these, try not to think of the ending, because we know the story of Joseph really well, and that is good. But I don't think we can quite grasp what it was like if we are thinking about the whole story. So just try to put yourself in Joseph's shoes here as we read. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. So they're kind of mocking him. They kind of just really hated him. Like, have we ever had anyone conspire against us to kill us before? Probably not. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And we know what his dreams were. His dreams were the dreams that he had of his family bowing down to him. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said unto them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. So it seems like here they threw him into a dry well. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of the Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brethren were contented. Then there passed by Midianites and merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit. Let's see, where do I stop? Okay, we'll stop there for now. Well, let's actually go down to verse 36 and read that. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and a captain of the guard. So they sell him to the Ishmaelites, and then the Ishmaelites sold him to Potiphar in Egypt. So let's just go back over this a little bit. So first of all, we see he was one of the youngest in the family, which back then was not necessarily one of the good things. The oldest brother, or the oldest son, is one that usually got the biggest blessing from his father. And all of his older siblings hated him. We can clearly see that they hated him pretty much to an extreme. And then he was sold into slavery, and he was taken into a strange land. And in Genesis chapter 39, 7 through 28, he was faced with temptation. And then he was thrown in prison for something he did not do. And then he was forgotten in prison by the people in there the baker and the butler that he interpreted their dream, he was forgotten by them. So how would we feel if we had those things happen to us? I had asked that question to me, and I was like, well, I can't really relate to Joseph and his coat in many colors. So I'm trying to think what would be. Like, how could I make that more relatable to me? So I came up with this little way you could change the story around a bit. I'm going to pick on Jeremy and Jonathan a little bit. So imagine Jeremy is Jacob, and Jonathan, you are Joseph. So Jeremy has brothers out, or Jeremy has sons all over the place watching their cows. But Jeremy has a favorite in his sons, for Jonathan for some reason, but for whatever reason, he's got a favorite. I know he doesn't, but just imagine that with me. So he buys him this truck, this Chevy Duramax, is that what the... And he has a flatbed on it, and there's these things on the flatbed called toolboxes. So it's decked out with all this fancy stuff, got a ranch hand bumper on it, it's deleted, with a nice muffler in it so it gets fuel economy. And then it's also got these decked out with these snap-on tools, maybe some gear wrench for the dirty work. But anyway, so then Jeremy's like, why don't you go out to Burns, Oregon, and check up on your brothers? So Jonathan gets up in his truck. He drives out there, and Jonathan's brothers are out there, and they're like, oh boy, here he comes. We can see his dust cloud. We can see here his engine. Isn't he so proud of his truck? Like, and they start to think of ways that they could get rid of him because they are jealous. They're envious. So I was thinking about that. And I was like, boy, if my dad gave one of my younger brothers a brand new truck and decked it all out, I would be pretty jealous. And I don't know how I would feel against him or feel towards that. So anyways, So I just kind of went along the lines of that and kind of related myself to that. And I guess we can keep going. And Jonathan goes there and the brothers, maybe some Mexicans are coming and going to Canada to sell some stuff. And they sell him to those. And eventually Jonah ends up in Canada. And then they wreck his truck and drive it over a cliff. And they haul it back here and ask Jeremy if this is your son's truck. Anyways, I kind of like to try to make these stories relatable to me a little bit. But another way that we can do that too is also look at some of the problems that he faced and kind of just bring him maybe not to the point where his brothers hated him, but maybe we have different people in our family that we just struggle with. Maybe they rub us the wrong way, or maybe we just don't quite get along with them that well. And we all face temptation like Joseph faced there in Potiphar's house. So we can relate with him on those things. So anyways, moving on to another story. We'll come back and find out what the conclusion is to these stories later. But let's turn over to Job chapter 1. And we also know this story very well. But again, I'd like you to try not to think of the ending or everything that we know, and try to think of what it'd be like to be in Job's shoes. I'm going to start reading in verse 13 of Job chapter 1. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And just keep in mind that this is what Job is hearing. This is what Job, he doesn't see the conversation that the Lord saw prior to this. Just like we don't see what God is talking right now and thinking of us. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And Job arose. Well, we'll stop there. And notice it says in here over and over again, it's something I noticed when I read this. It says, and while he was yet speaking. Sometimes it feels like, even in our lives, that when something goes wrong, it's like we just barely recover from that, and then another thing goes wrong. Like, I can remember times getting ready for a trip. It's like you get ready to go. You're finally getting out the door, and then you're just like, oh, you forgot something, or it's just like, what more could go wrong? And then another thing goes wrong. So that's something that stood out to me, but let's breeze over this again and just kind of pull out what went wrong to Job. So first of all, he loses his oxen, asses, and servants. And then he loses his sheep and more servants. Then he loses his camel and a lot more servants, probably. Then he loses all of his children. And then in Job chapter 2, 7 and 8, he loses his health. And then in verse 9 of chapter 2, he loses the support of his wife, which I can only imagine what that would be like. Being married, I can only imagine what it'd be like to even be up here without her support. It's something that's amazing. And it kind of reminds me of something that someone asked, someone is at the last volleyball, I think. Someone comes up and elbows me and is like, hey, Titus, you're really standing up against the peer pressure of growing a beard. And I'm like, trying to find something to tell, some way to respond. And I'm like, well, with the support of my wife, I can almost do anything. So I think I can relate to a little bit of what Job, he lost the support of his wife, and I can only imagine what it'd be like to not have her support in life. So that would be pretty hard. And Job had it really hard. He had it kind of an extreme, we might think. But in a lot of ways, maybe we can relate, because we lose things. We have family members pass away. We lose some of our assets to our business takes some loss. Maybe we lose our health or something like that. Or maybe you lose the support of your companion, your wife. So we can kind of relate to a little bit to that. But this next story, maybe we can relate to a little bit more. So let's turn to John chapter 11, the Gospel of John. This is a story of Lazarus. So we're going to start reading in verse 1 of chapter 11 and read through verse 7. And then we'll skip down to 20 and through 37. Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. So they're saying, Jesus, your friend is sick, the one that you love. When Jesus heard that, he said, the sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. So she probably went home thinking, okay, he's going to get better. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that, he said to his disciples, let us go into Judea again. His disciples said unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and thou goest hither again? So essentially, he stays there, and he doesn't seem to be making any progress in that. So let's go down to verse 20. Through 37. Let's see if I got this right. Let me see. I think we're not supposed to go there yet. Well, we'll read it anyways. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, and Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus said unto her, thy brother shall rise again. I think I should be reading this after in the next part. So we'll just stop there, and we'll just go back on that and see what their problem was, and kind of try to relate to that. So first of all, we see that Lazarus was sick, which is not fun, but then they hear that Jesus says his sickness is not unto death, which from what I understand is, it's not bad. Like Jesus saying, it's not that bad. He's not going to die from it, or that's what it appears to me. But then Lazarus dies. So here it seems like Jesus is not, what Jesus said would happen is not. Things are like out of control. Things are out of control. And I think we can feel that way a lot too in life. We can feel that things are just not in control. Jesus' promises are not coming true. And they waited over 4 days, is what I could find out here. They waited over 4 days for Jesus to come. And maybe they had more patience back then, but this day and age, with Amazon and all that, you kind of find it hard to wait. Kind of reminded me of some waiting that I had to do, and I didn't do very good at it. We have this, I had this order there at work coming from Uline there in Washington, and you pay, they only have one shipping option, and it's second day. So it's, you kind of pay for it a little bit. So we had ordered some stuff from this company, this vendor up there, and we kind of need it, and it's not bad. I guess the shipping's not bad, but it's one day, so it's not free. So you pay for the shipping, and it's supposed to be there the next day. So I'm like checking the tracking number, making sure it's getting left, and just really just looking at it because it's supposed to be here tomorrow. And And then after checking it, I see it's like, okay, why is UPS not picking it up? They haven't got the package yet. And usually by now they would have got it. So I'm kind of getting a little impatient. So then I call them up and they say, well, we'll wait. Let's just wait a little bit. We'll wait a little bit. I'm like, oh, I should have done that already. Like, I should have thought that's what was going to happen. I should have just waited. I was growing impatient. But then eventually, so I'm going back and forth checking the tracking number throughout the day, and it's not going. And then I can't remember if it was that day or if it was the next morning. I think it was the next morning I check the tracking number. I get there and I type in the tracking number, and it's in Canada. So it went the opposite direction. And so I call them up, and then I'm like, where is it at? Like, what's going on? And they ended up sending out a new one and saying that one was lost, and it ended up showing up anyway somehow. Even UPS said that on their website that it was lost and consider contacting your vendor. But it ended up showing up anyways, and I was just kind of like, this opened my eyes to the impatience that I have with some things like that, and I think we can relate to that a little bit. But they waited over 4 days for Jesus to come. And then they were probably confused with what Jesus said, because Jesus said the sickness was not unto death, and here Lazarus dies. So we can kind of see their problems there a little bit. So let's move on to another couple of people that had some problems. Let's turn over to Acts chapter 16. And again, try to place yourselves in their position. Acts chapter 16, and we'll read in verses 19 through 24. And when their master saw that the hope of their gains was gone, they caught Paul and Silas and drew them into the marketplace unto the rulers. This is chapter 16, and we'll be reading in 20 next. And brought them to the magistrate, saying, these men, being Jews, do exceedingly trouble our city, and teach customs which are not lawful for us to receive, neither to observe, being Romans. And the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates rent off their clothes and commanded to beat them. And when they had laid many stripes upon them, they cast them into the inner prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely, who, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. So we see here, first of all, their message that they're bringing was rejected by the people there. And then they were beaten, and then they were thrown into prison, and their feet were made fast in the stocks. How many of you guys know what these stocks look like? Kind of have an idea? Well, I searched, and I came up with a picture. It's kind of grainy, but I'll show it to you guys anyways. So you can see kind of what it looked like. This is a picture I got online of medieval torture, the stocks. You can see his feet are stuck through holes in that plank, and there's locks on the end. So their feet are like spread apart, and it's probably not very comfortable in there at all. And you can't lay down. You can see their back is against a wall, and they're on a hard bench. It probably would not be very comfortable at all. So not a good situation for them to be in at all. Not comfortable at all. So, yeah, we can kind of see that they were not comfortable. But we'll see what the response was later. We know what it is, but try to put yourselves in their shoes. And then in Exodus, we have the story of the children of Israel. In Exodus 14, we won't turn to these. Exodus 14, 10 through 12, Pharaoh's army has them cornered between the Red Sea and the Egyptian army. And then in Exodus 15, after they go through the Red Sea, we see they run out of water. And in Exodus 16, they run out of food. And then in chapter 17, they run out of water again. And then later in Exodus 32, they're waiting again for Moses to come down from the mountain. And yeah, so they're doing a lot of waiting. They're going without some of these necessities in life that we might think as necessities, which are. But again, they had problems there. And then we'll turn to this next one. 1 Samuel chapter 13. We're going to read a story about Saul, or see a little bit about Saul. So 1 Samuel chapter 13. See if I can find it. We're going to start reading in chapter 13, verse 5. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore, in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward of Bethaven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves, and in thickets, and in rocks, and in high places, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over to Jordan, to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and the people followed him, trembling. And he tarried 7 days, according to the time set that Samuel had appointed. But we'll stop there. So here we see that they are... Wait, we'll finish that verse. That goes in with this too. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So we see here, if we can put ourselves in their shoes, 30,000, what does it say here? 30,000 chariots. That's a lot of chariots. That's a lot of chariots. And 6,000 horsemen. So you got, excuse me. So you have 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand of the sea. That sounds pretty dire. Like, that sounds like, wow, that sounds like, that would be quite the predicament to be in with your small army. And you're cornered. Your people are hiding in the rocks and in the cliffs. And Samuel has not shown up yet. So we can see that Saul was in a predicament there too. All right, so let's go back through the stories and let's see how they responded. See what the response to the situation was. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 45. Read a couple of verses there. I'll read verses 5 through 8. Of chapter 45. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry. And this is Joseph responding to his brothers after Joseph has been set up as Pharaoh in the land, and after all of the evil that Joseph's brothers did to him, this is what his response is. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing or harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity on the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. So you can see there Joseph's response to the problems that he went through. Isn't that quite amazing that he was able to respond that way? That is definitely not the way the flesh, or my flesh anyways, would want to respond. And I have to ask myself, how would we have responded? There were so many opportunities for Joseph to be bitter, to be angry at God and at his brothers. But I believe his perspective on it all allowed him to not be bitter against his brothers or at God or what God was allowing him to do. I think if we become bitter at those things around us if we become bitter at those things around us that are maybe directly tied with the trials or things like that, if we become bitter at those that are bitter at the people around us, I think it will hinder us from seeing what God has, the plan that God has through those things. But I think it's something that we need to be very careful that we do not become bitter against the hard time or the pruning that God does in our lives. And I have written down here a question that we can think about is, how would we have responded to this situation? Like, put yourself in his shoes. What would our response have been? Are we bitter at anything? Maybe something that happened in the past. See, this all this happened in the past, and yes, Joseph was in a different place, but we can see here clearly that he was not bitter at it, even though it happened in the past. So are we bitter at anything that happened in the past? And we can also see that he was faithful to God by choosing to flee Potiphar's wife instead of giving in to that temptation. We can see he was faithful to God in that way. And he's also a faithful and trustworthy slave. And he's also faithful in the prison where, even when God allowed him to be thrown there for doing nothing wrong. So he is faithful wherever he was. And moving on now, let's go to Job, see what his response was. We'll read in Job chapter 1, we'll read 20 through 22. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. And said, "Naked I came out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. So in verse 20 we see that he worshipped. Even after all the things that happened to him, he worshipped. And then in verse 21 it shows he blessed the Lord. And in verse 22 it says, "In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Looked into that word a little bit and says, to charge God foolishly is to blame or question God in a disrespectful way. I think that would be so hard to have all those things happen to you and to respond to God and maybe even ask why, but to do that in a respectful way would be challenging. All right, now moving on to Mary and Martha, the story with that. Let's turn back to John chapter 16. I'm going to have to eliminate some of this stuff so I can get done in time. Sorry, John chapter 11, and we'll read in verse 16. Well, I have down here 16 through 32, but let's skip some of this so we don't run over time. Well, let's start there. Let's start in 20. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee." Jesus said unto her, "Thy brother shall rise again." Martha said unto him, "I know that he shall rise in the resurrection in the last day." Jesus said unto her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this?" She said unto him, "Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world." And when she had said so, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. And the Jews then, which were with her in the house, comforted her when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, "She goeth unto the grave to weep there." Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in spirit and was troubled. So one thing that we can see is the response is, if only you had come earlier. If only you had been here. Maybe there's things in our life that we think that too. If only you would have worked this way. If only you would have come. And there's been many times where I've asked that question too, and I know some of us have as well. Like with different things in our life. I think of the accident that my brother was in. If only this would have happened. If only he would have left a little bit later. So we can kind of relate to that, asking that question a little bit. But we don't see the whole picture. We see just what we see, but we can trust that God has a plan, and we'll see that here soon. So in Acts 16, we see Paul and Silas, their response, they sing praises to God, even though they were in something similar to this. Sometimes we might even be standing here and singing, and we're like, man, can we sit down? Like, getting a little uncomfortable. But they were singing praises to God, and they were in a very uncomfortable situation. And in the children of Israel, we see that they gave into fear, they kind of got irrational. They said, if only we were back in Egypt. And they blamed Moses. And yeah, we kind of see their response throughout that. And then when they ran out of food and water, they complained and murmured against Moses and God. And they wished again that they had died in Egypt. And then another thing I have down here is they tempted God by saying, is the Lord among us or not? Sometimes we ask this question, like, where is God? Where is God in this situation? And then in Exodus chapter 32 and verse 1, they fell into idolatry when they ran out of patience when Moses was up on the mountain. What is our response when we are waiting on God? Do we wait patiently, or do we tend to, well, let's move forward and do it with our own wisdom? And in 1 Samuel chapter 13, 9 through 12, we see a similar response with when he... Let's actually turn there. That's 1 Samuel chapter 13, 9 through 12. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me. And this is his response to the predicament that he was in with the enemy having a tremendous army around him. And he was waiting, and Samuel had not arrived yet. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. So we can see here what Saul did. Just before Samuel got there, he proceeded with his own wisdom and he disobeyed. And sometimes we can tend to do that. Just before God is about to do something, do a miracle, we can kind of mess things up sometimes. If we grow impatient and go about things in our own wisdom. All right, so let's go back over some of these and briefly look at what God's viewpoint is on each of these things and what his plan was. So we won't turn there, but in Genesis chapter 45, 5 through 8, I think we already read that, God had a plan to preserve the house of Israel, and Joseph and all the trials he went through kept his family alive through the years of famine. And we can all see that all the trials and the way it worked out for the good of his family and for Joseph himself. And it preserved the nation of Israel. And let's turn to Job chapter 1. Again, we'll see what God's perspective was on Job. I always thought this was interesting because it's kind of a little picture of that you can, little glimpse in heaven that we can get here. I'll just read this quickly in verse 1, or chapter 1, verses 6 through 12. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said to Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Hast thou not blessed the work of his hands? And his sustenance is increased in the land. So we can see here very clearly that what was going on in heaven prior to Job's trials. We can see that the conversation there between the Lord and Satan. And we see here that God only allowed that to happen because he knew Job could take it. And just like that, that reminded me of a verse in 1 Corinthians that talks about he won't let us be tempted more than that we are able. He won't allow us to go through more than what we can. And we can see that conversation go on there in heaven. And then in chapter 2, verses 1 through 7, we see that Satan comes back and he's like, let's read that actually. Let's read a few of those verses. And he still holdeth fast to his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without a cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. So we see there Satan's like, okay, well, I want to try, see if I can get at his life. See if I can go farther with this temptation, with this torture. And we see God's viewpoint of that is God was proving Satan or proving Job before Satan for his glory. And moving on to the story of Mary and Martha, we see in verse 15 and verses 42 and 45, Jesus said that he allowed Lazarus to die so that they would believe on him and that God had sent him. And moving down to Paul and Silas. Let's actually turn there. Let's turn to Acts chapter 16. We'll read verses 29 through 34. Let's see if we find that. And this is right after the earthquake, and Paul and Silas and the prisoners have been broken loose. And then he called for a light and sprang in, and this is the jailer that called for a light, and came trembling and fell down before Paul and Silas, and he brought them out and said, Sirs, what must I do to be saved? And they said, Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved in thy house. And they spake unto him the word of the Lord, and to all that were in his house, and he took them the same hour of the night, and washed their stripes, and was baptized, and he and all his straightway. And when they had brought them into his house, he set meat before them and rejoiced, believing in God with all his house. So we can see how Paul and Silas' good response in this awful situation, how it worked in the jailer's life there, and eventually brought him and his house to a place of salvation. So we can see that our trials can bring bring others to the Lord too, and can speak to others. And then we see for the Israelites in Numbers chapter 14, we see that their murmuring and complaining ultimately cost them their lives and cost them from seeing the promised land. And how much more will our complaining keep us from seeing the promised land, and our lack of trust keep us from the land that the Lord has promised to us? And Saul, we see in Samuel chapter 13, Saul's disobedience cost him the blessing of the Lord and his kingdom. So he lost a great deal over that bad response, or that wrong response. Now I want to look a little bit on how, or a few things on how we are supposed to respond. We are called to respond joyfully. And James chapter 1 says, count it all joy when you fall into temptations. And in 1 Peter chapter 4, 12 through 13, it says, Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. So we can see here we are called to respond with joy and rejoice. In Romans 5, verses 33 and 5, we say, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given to us. So we glory in our tribulations. We're called to glory in them. And then we're also called to endure with hope. James 1:12 says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. And in Isaiah 41:10, we see that we're supposed to respond in faith and not fear. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. And then quickly here before we close, I'd like to go through a few reasons why God might bring temptations to us. John 15, I might have someone read. Can someone read, find 1 Peter chapter 1, 6 through 7, and read that when I ask you to. If someone could do that, that would be great. Yeah, it's 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. But not yet. I'll let you know when we can read that. John chapter 15, verse 2 says, every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. So that kind of goes along with our example, the story of the earlier about pruning. But some reasons why God might bring trials into our lives can be to purge us and to prune those branches away. And in Isaiah 64:8, these hard times can shape us if we allow it to. But now, O Lord, thou art our Father, we are the clay, and thou art our potter, and we are the work of thy hand. So we can see there it is to shape us into the image that he wants us to be in, so we can be a useful vessel for him. Can someone read 1 Peter 1, 6 through 7?
Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith be much more precious than that of gold, that perishes.
Thank you. So what do we see there the reason for trials could be? Very good. I've written down here that we may be found unto praise and honor at the appearing of Jesus Christ. So we can go through those for the Lord's glory, for his praise and honor. And we can see in this story that we read earlier about Paul and Silas, it can be for the salvation of others. We don't always know why God brings us through trials, difficult trials, but we can trust that he has a plan for us. Romans 8:28 says that all things will work for our good if we are faithful and if we love and trust him. So with that, I'd like to read a song, part of a song anyways, in closing. Master Potter, why do you labor all day, giving such effort to rough, worthless pieces of clay? Why such feeling in your hands? Why such care in every touch? Why all the struggle? Your creation is nothing but dust. I'm molding a masterpiece, a work of great beauty. I'm molding a masterpiece, my labor's not done. A trophy, a treasure of worth beyond measure. I'm molding a masterpiece of love. So my hope is that this can encourage you to be faithful in those hard times that the Lord brings us through, and also to stand strong and not to fall to the temptations or the trials that we might be tempted to fall into. whether that be murmuring and complaining like the Israelites, or growing impatient and resulting to our growing impatient and ultimately following our own wisdom and disobeying what the Lord has for us. So, thank you for your time.